So my cousin was taking a karate class. The day I walked in and watched, I was kind of hooked.
In the end, you're still that same child I knew.
I just went, this is amazing.
Helpless. Like the night I killed your father.
They were sparring, and I thought that looked intriguing.
You want revenge?
I would love to put on some gloves and punch people.
Show me.
Hello there, and welcome to Hey Lesson, the podcast where we ask smart people silly questions inspired by video games. I'm your host, Brendan Caldwell, and I am here to underhandedly teach you things through the lens of popular games and the sheer force of my own naivete, but also by talking to some smart folks. Today we're talking about Sifu, which is a martial arts action game in which you play as a student of Kung Fu. You're out to get revenge for your father's death, and you've got to fight your way through various chumps to achieve that. But we wanted to know more about Kung Fu itself. What are some of the misconceptions about it? What does it actually take to learn and practice that? So keep listening to hear from an instructor of martial arts who'll talk about what it's like to be a teacher of that style of fighting. That's coming up in a few minutes. First, however, let me introduce our guest co-host this week. It's games journalist Ki-hoon Chan. Hello, Ki-hoon.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I was just done with dinner, and I'm talking to you.
Yeah, and your cat was screaming in the background, so if anyone hears a cat, it's just a bonus cat.
Yeah.
We've worked together before, so we know one another, but maybe you could tell the listener who doesn't recognize you, who do you work for? What sort of games or topics do you cover?
So previously I was a freelancer. Just very recently, I joined The Gamer as their features editor. I just write a lot of stuff there. I wrote a couple of pieces on Sifu, and they were received. I wouldn't say well received. They were received. and I got a lot of people. I mean, the nice thing is that there's a lot of people who came by and said really nice things to me. But there were also a lot of people who came by and said not so pleasant stuff to me. So it has been interesting. It's been an interesting experience.
I have a feeling like we're gonna get into it. Before we dive down any deep analytical holes about the game, could you give us a rundown of the basics of it? Like, how does Sifu start, for instance? Where is it set? What does the player actually do moment to moment?
Sifu is basically it is a fighting game. You play as this person, could be a guy, could be a lady, whose father and Sifu has been, murdered by I think an ex disciple of his, and the whole point is that you're just hunting him and his henchmen down and just punching and kicking a lot of people along the way. The game is very obviously set in China, and the interesting thing is that the developer who was behind the game is a French studio, and all of them are white, hence the slight controversy that they were facing at the moment when a couple of Chinese and Asian writers pointed out that this didn't seem very right. But back to the game, right? The game is not the easiest game to play, to be honest. To me, the game is very, very punishing and very relentless in the way that, they just throw enemies at you, and you're supposed to really learn and master every single level you go through in the game, because if you don't fight well enough or if you don't defend yourself well enough, there's a tendency to die a lot. And death is extremely punishing in the game, because every time you die, you will grow older. Basically, the more times you die, the faster you age. Like when I was playing the game at my second level already, I was 50 years old, which is incredible.
I did play a bit last night, and I died in the second level at the ripe old age of 71 or something.
It is punishing. And the thing is, when I first played the game, because I wanted to do like an impressions piece on it for the site, I thought that the age will restart every time you go to a new level or like a new place, but it doesn't, and that really took me by surprise, because the aging mechanic in the game is really, really, really punishing, and it's something that I just, I don't know, I just cannot, I just don't know how to get behind. And to me. Even like even things like experience points. You know, with experience points, you can unlock certain additional moves. But these experience points are also really, really difficult to unlock. To get and unlock as well. So in order to get really far ahead in Sifu, you really need to master every single level you're in, and it's really a lot of effort.
Like I say, we're going to get into a little bit more about what you think of the game's intentions and whether you think it's any good, among other concerns, in a moment. But for now, since this is a game about learning a martial art, I thought it would be good to speak to someone who has been through that to such an extent that she is now a teacher of it herself. Carrie Ogawa Wong is an instructor of Kung Fu, among other styles of martial art, and here's what she had to tell us about the practice. To begin with, could you tell me a bit about yourself? Who are you and what do you do?
My name is Carrie Ogawa Wong, and I am the head instructor of a system called the White Lotus Kung Fu System. My husband is actually the originator of the system, and in December of 2008, he actually turned the system completely over to me, and he has pretty much retired from teaching at the studio.
You haven't inherited a whole school of martial arts, is that it?
He's kind of passed on his system for me to carry on rather than just retire and have to close the studio. So I teach classes to adults and children the art of White Lotus system. I also teach Tai Chi and Qigong as well, which are internal systems of Chinese art.
How long have you been practicing martial arts?
I have been practicing for about 48 years. So I'm not going to tell you when I started, because then you can add it together and figure out my age. No.
Okay, I won't ask.
No, I am proud to say, because at my age, I feel I'm very physical and can carry my own. So I started quite late. I didn't start completely starting martial arts till I was 19.
Why did you get into it?
Well, I had been a dancer for about 10 years, from the age of like 5 until 15. And then at 15, I decided that I was not going to pursue it professionally, so why do I keep taking these classes? So I quit. But then after about a couple of years, I just needed something physical. I was doing sports in high school, but I just missed the movement of dance. And so my cousin was taking a karate class, and he had his brown belt, and he had approached me and said, I think you would really, really enjoy taking karate, because we do kata, which is a lot like dance. I went to one of his classes, and the day I walked in and watched, I was kind of hooked. I just went, this is amazing. They were sparring, and I thought that looked intriguing. I would love to put on some gloves and punch people. So my background started in that for about a year and a half before I actually changed and started studying Kung Fu.
What are the reasons that people generally come to your school to take up Kung Fu?
Most people see what they think is Kung Fu in the movies or on television, or they've just had an interest. They've seen karate, they've seen other arts, other Japanese arts, Korean arts, and they just seem to be drawn to Kung Fu. You know, back in the day when the Kung Fu series was on television, everybody wanted to do Kung Fu. When Ip Man came out with Donnie Yen, that's another thing that drew people into doing Kung Fu. A lot of people will come to our studio also because they're very interested in learning Tai Chi.
The game that we're talking about is called Sifu, and you have been a Sifu yourself. Could you tell us what that word means and how it relates to Kung Fu?
So the word Sifu, if it's translated, means teacher and or father. So most Kung Fu systems are built on a family structure, like a father, a mother, an older brother, an older sister, younger brother, you know, and so forth. So Sifu is pretty generic, meaning teacher and or father. Actually, there would be a separate title because I'm a female. But to keep it very simple, we just use Sifu across the board. Underneath Sifu, you have like Dai Si Hing, which is an elder male. Dai Si Ji is an elder female, and so forth. It's just built like a family.
And your title is now Sigung, right?
Yes.
What does that mean? Was that one up?
You got it. It's one up. So Sigung means I have completed all of my study in a particular style. That doesn't mean I can't keep learning. That just means that whatever the curriculum for this particular system is, I've completed it. Sigung, you can roughly translate it as master, but I just don't like people saying, oh, Master Carey or Master Wong. So I use Sigung because to me it sounds respectful.
You've seen a few minutes of the game. I think I sent you some.
Yes, I did.
Do you recognize any of the maneuvers in the game on display?
I did. A lot of the blocking I recognize. What a lot of people don't understand is Kung Fu has a lot more similarities than differences with other systems. So the blocking techniques are a lot the same. We do a lot more open-handed blocking than fisted. The kicks are pretty generic across the board. So I did see, you know, really nice kicks in the game. And like takedowns and sweeps, they're pretty much the same.
What is the best way for a movie or a game to go about incorporating Kung Fu into their stories?
Probably the best way to do it would be to, once the storyboards are done and the story is put together, would be to actually call in someone that is pretty experienced in your Kung Fu. Maybe even bring in a fight choreographer or stuntman and let them look at what the story is, and they can help create what a fight would look like. And then the game can be produced around those moves. And nowadays there's so many different techniques being used. Like there's what they call tricking now. So they would incorporate a lot of Kung Fu kicking, but they would incorporate the flips and the acrobatic moves.
These are things that wouldn't necessarily be something you would want to do in a fight, but look good in a movie or a video game.
Exactly. And that's the big difference. Everything you see on television and movie is specifically made to look really good. Believable? Not always that believable if you're looking at a real life situation. With children, that's what's really hard for them. They go, well, I saw this on such and such a show. When are we going to learn that? And we kind of sit back and go, well, you'll learn something similar in time, in due time.
Do you think that's why some martial artists go on to work in film? Because they get to do these cool moves and come up with creative ways to...
Oh, sure. Because there's so much talent out there that they want to be able to put it on the screen to share for people to see what can be done. On the street, everything, when you really think about it, it's pretty common sense. You can't get too fancy or you're going to defeat yourself.
What's the most difficult thing for a student of martial arts to learn?
I think probably the patience and the perseverance. I've noticed over the years, we live in such a society where everything is so fast-paced. You know, fast food, drive-through. Students don't want to take the time, put in a lot of time on their own. And you can tell as an instructor, a student that has gone home, has really practiced what you've tried to teach them. I mean, that's what I'm seeing over all the years that I've taught.
Is there any physical technique that really gives students trouble?
Kicking tends to be a little bit hard. A lot of students don't want to work on their stretching and flexibility. Also, stamina. It takes a lot of endurance to be able to do a series of kicking. Also, being able to realize the transfer of power from your leg to a kick. Out of all the techniques, that would be it. That and weaponry. Once you get into Chinese weaponry, it gets a little complicated.
Why is that?
The weapons that we use, they vary in size and shape and weight. The more advanced weapons can weigh 15 pounds. And once you're, you know, swinging that around and twirling it in the air, it's a good workout versus just a simple bow staff.
Can you give us some examples of like the kinds of weapons that would get used?
Well, we have the spear, which is the original shape, but not sharp. We have what they call a Kwan Do. The best way to explain it looks like a huge can opener on a pole. We have what they call a tiger fork, and it's three prongs. The weapon was originally used to hunt tigers.
Really?
Yeah, those are your heavier weapons, and not everybody gets to the level where they use those.
You've performed in some movies as well as a fighter, so you're not just a teacher. What's the difference between training someone to fight and performing in a role like that?
When we're teaching or training someone, you're teaching specific techniques, timing techniques, distance techniques. When it comes to putting it on the screen, there's a vast difference of like your space, and you're really over-exaggerating a lot of moves. So punches that I would show you on the bag at the studio are going to be a little over-exaggerated because the camera angles and how the camera picks up the move are totally different.
You've also trained some other actors for roles as well, in which they have to fight in a certain style.
Yes.
Is it hard to work with people who don't have a background in martial arts, but who will still need to know how to perform complicated moves?
You know, people ask us that question all the time, and actors that come to us that we've trained, they have this ability to be able to do almost everything. Because you think about it, actors can sing, they can dance, they do a myriad of things for different roles. So the ones that we have trained picked up the moves very quickly. In fact, we had to teach them empty-handed moves and then sword and staff moves. It would take one of our kung fu students to learn like the simple twists and turns and figure eights, those kind of moves. Our normal student might take a couple months, and these actors have to pick it up within a day or 2 days. Because when they're training with us, we only may get them for 2 weeks at the longest. Usually it's like, okay, you have them 2 hours every other day for a week, or 2 hours for the next 2 weeks, and then they're off learning whatever else they need for a role.
It's not a whole lot of time.
No, it's not.
Has there ever been any actor who was particularly bad at this kind of stuff? Or
I'm not going to tell you. No. You know, actually, no. We've been super lucky. We worked with Kevin Sorbo when he did Hercules, Lucy Lawless. We did Jason Scott Lee for the movie Dragon. Ryan Gosling did Young Hercules. And they were all just super talented. And I think the other thing, too, is when they get a mega role, like they really want to make the role believable and they want to make themselves look good. So that helps. That helps a lot.
In the video game, the character you play as ages as the story goes on. So over time, your character will go from a young man or from a young woman whose experience is limited into an older, more practiced combatant. For those of us who aren't kids or spry teenagers, is it possible to take up a martial art like Aikido or Kung Fu or whatever as an adult, no matter the age? Or is there a certain point at which this becomes just too difficult?
You know, I really think as long as you're in fairly good physical shape, your age doesn't have that much to do with it. Part of it is finding a good instructor that's willing to guide you along the way. Obviously, if you're going to start Kung Fu at 45 and you have someone that starts at 15, obviously the 15-year-old's body can just bend in every direction and so forth. But if you have a good instructor, and we try to like guide our students according to what their body can physically do. So if I'm teaching a technique and I find that because of their age, or maybe there's a limitation, I'll work around that. I'm not going to water down the technique. I'll just work around it so that they're getting the benefit that everybody else is getting.
A lot of people know about Kung Fu through movies, like you say. Are there any big misconceptions about Kung Fu that you would like to clear up? What would you like people to understand most?
Oh, yes. I definitely want to clear up something.
Oh, go on.
Everybody seems to say, oh, Kung Fu is so soft and flowery. And I get where they're coming from because they see these circular blocks and they see these movements that, you know, we're so geared that everything's got to be a straight line punch to be powerful. And it's just not true. There's When you say kung fu, it's like saying car. You have all different makes of cars, and under each make of car, different models. So when you say kung fu, it's very generic. There's thousands of styles of kung fu. And there are styles of kung fu that are very linear and very, very powerful. Then there's moves in some kung fu styles that do. There's a lot of circular motion, like a circling tiger move or a dragon move. But they're just as powerful as a straight line punch or a straight line attack would be. A good way for I explain to my students is a circle. A circle is nonstop, and a circle creates its own power because look at a wheel. A wheel is the same shape of a circle. And if a circle can move a 10-ton truck, you can't say that that circle's weak, right? So the same thing with a circular block. It might look soft and pretty, but a circle will always counter something that's linear. Does that make sense?
I think so. When you say a circular block, do you mean a...
Like, let's say if your hands are in front of you, rather than just make a hard straight line block, I'm going to circle like a crescent shape. So that crescent shape, it stops the punch or the attack, but it also redirects it because of the circular motion.
So what you would like people to understand is that because certain kung fu techniques look graceful, it doesn't mean that they're not going to hit you like a truck.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm anticipating people are going to play this game and they're going to think, that looks cool. I felt cool playing this game. I'm going to try this out. Do you have any advice or caution or anything to say to someone like that?
The only thing I always tell people is find a place that will allow you to go in and watch. Go in and watch and ask questions. And then always keep in mind what you see on the screen, whether it's a game or a movie or television, it's built on entertainment purposes. And you need to see what you're looking for. If it's just because it's cool, you know, try it. Maybe you're just doing it for fun and then realize that after a while it becomes like part of your life. It's a lifestyle.
Carrie Agawa Wong, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's been great.
That was Sigung Carrie Agawa Wong from the White Lotus Martial Arts Center in California. If you want to hear a longer uncut version of the chat, you can get one by becoming a patron. For about $2 a month or more, you get unabridged interviews with all of our experts, and there are some tiers with bonus episodes and update videos. Just visit patreon.com/heylesson or click the link in the episode notes. Thank you for indulging my little mid-episode advertisement, Ki-hoon.
Yeah, no worries.
We're not going to pretend to have heard Carrie because, fun behind-the-scenes fact, we're recording our own chatty segment first, this segment. So this time we don't actually know what she's told us, but we can talk more about Sifu, the game. So you said you got to the second level and grew really old. Is that where you like tapped out, or have you been trying to persevere and keep playing through?
Okay, so when I was at the second level, that was, I think that was the club's level. I did spend a couple of hours there. Actually, I spent a really long time in this game, even though I haven't actually like advanced very far ahead in the game in the grand scheme of things. But I was spending some time at the club level, and when I was there, I was already 50 years old. And to be honest, the game ends, or like you suffer a game over when your character reaches 75 years old. And given the fact that you begin the game when you're 20, it's really, really punishing. And I was actually going to go back and replay the previous the first level so that, you know, I can come out of it a lot younger and, you know, go and then move on the second level, because there are actually 5 levels altogether. So if you're already 50 years old by the second level, it's really difficult to proceed on with the rest of the game. Yeah. I did see a couple of playthroughs for the subsequent levels after that, but essentially I'm still stuck at the second level, to be quite honest. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. The other thing is that when you get older, it says that you hit harder, so you do more damage, but your health also, you take more damage. So you're weaker physically, so you become more of kind of a glass cannon.
Yes, I think that's the idea of it. The idea is that, you know, as you as you grow older, you are wiser because you learn from your past mistakes, but also because you're older, your endurance or your health suffers a little in a sense. So while that is good, I did definitely notice a difference when I was you know, punching enemies at a much older age. But at the same time, I die very quickly as well. It is not easy. You can age as quickly as 7 years at one go, which is really scary.
So the story behind the game is that you're out to get revenge for your father and teacher's death. Revenge is often used in games for a thematic purpose. Does it work for you here? Does it have a novel approach to the revenge quest?
Okay, this is an interesting thing I've heard from some people, because a lot of Chinese martial art films, right? There is always a sense of, you know, using the martial arts for good. The Sifu, for instance, he's supposed to be someone who, typically in a lot of martial arts films, someone who is a bit more like, you know, fending off terrorists or enemies of the state and things like that. A lot of especially for a lot of Chinese martial art films, there is a sense of like patriotism to the whole film. So the idea of using martial arts to seek revenge, especially a revenge game set in China, it's, I would say, a little bit unexpected. I've heard some Chinese critics and writers who didn't like the idea of it. I'm personally okay with it because, I mean, there are always people who abuses their power and stuff like that. So thematically, I think it's fine. But what I didn't like about the game is that I just feel that there is very little emotions to the game. It doesn't really hone into the revenge theme. There is no bigger narrative or bigger themes that they've addressed. At the end of the day, this is, to me, very much like a fighting simulator where you just fight bad guys in a really cool way.
Yeah, because, I mean, we see other games use revenge as a theme. Why do you think Sifu feels to use the theme to good effect?
I would say that the story for them, it's a nice wrapper around the mechanics and the systems of the game. To me, it feels very much like, we want the players to know what it's like to fight many, many people in a tight corridor, and because it sounds and feels cool. And it's true, it does feel and sound cool, especially like in Sifu, where they have the very famous old boy scene where, you know, the protagonist just punches and fights and kicks a lot of people in a very tight corridor.
So like it doesn't have any deeper impact?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it has very much of a very deeper impact other than the fact that it feels like the developers just wanted to make a cool game about fighting a lot of people at the same time, kind of like Jackie Chan's movies, which they did admit to that in several interviews. And the revenge theme and the revenge part just comes in later, I guess.
You say it's set in somewhere in China. What are the game's environments like? Are you fighting in a packed street or apartment blocks?
The first level takes place in a street. In a warehouse in the street, and then the second level was in a club, the third level was in a museum, and the fourth level was kind of like a tower, a very business, those very modern business towers where people go, offices, yes, that's why it's called offices. Yeah. And to be quite honest, I really like the environments. There were some people who said that the environments may feel a little bit gimmicky. Users China as a gimmicky setting, but to be quite honest, there is a lot of games, at least games and in general popular media, when we talk about China, it's always about, like, you know, the rural countryside of China. When you think of China, you tend to have a very specific impression of what it looks like, at least in popular culture and in games. I mean, you think of games like Jade Empire, for instance, and you know, yeah, exactly that was what they were thinking about when they think about China. And for Sifu to kind of, you know, replicate environments that look more like modern China is something that I really appreciate, actually. See, I can say nice things about Sifu too. Yeah. take for instance the club level, right? Okay, there are a few things about the environments that I find really, really weird, and it was really jarring for me. Like, for instance, there were a lot of English signs, which was kind of weird because in China you don't really see a lot of English signs. And there was one thing that I pointed out also, which was that the graffiti, for instance. Like in at one corner, they were in Chinese. They have this phrase "交钱一手交货," so basically it means, you know, give me the money and I'll give you the goods. But right next to the graffiti, they have like an English version of that same quote, which is like "no money, no talk," which is really funny. It's just really, really jarring to see things like that happening.
Like as if they expected
like it's,
an English guest to show up in
the middle of the
neighborhood.
Yeah, it's just really weird. And things like, you know, they have signs that say "stuff only" and stuff and in English, which seems really, really weird. And this is just talking about environments. I have the club, the club level is something that I really, really like because China does have a bustling nightlife. And, you know, the clubs in China and, you know, the club that they have in Sifu, they look realistic. They don't look like they're just hanging dragon heads everywhere or like, you know, dragon motifs everywhere, which is cool. And I really, really like that. And I think there was one scene where they have the DJ. There was a DJ. And the DJ was wearing this lion dance head as some sort of a costume. And I really like that. Like, I think that's the coolest thing ever. And I was like a lot of people might think that it's a little bit like orientalist. And of course, I'm only one Chinese person. Like, we are not a monolith, so obviously other people may disagree with me, but I found that, you know, like, you know, you're wearing a DJ helmet. There's a lion dance helmet, which is really, really cool. And things like, you know, the words that they display on screens as you're fighting. Yeah, it's the little things like that. I actually find the environment's really, really cool. And of course the museum level as well. They have things like, you know, modern art and more traditional art. It's not just a series of dragon paintings and watercolors and things like that. So I would say it's a slice of modern China that you don't really get to see in popular culture. The environment is something that I actually really, really like. Yeah.
You wrote that piece, and one of your problems was with the game was that the Chinese-ness of the game was basically just flavor. It was like used as a palette rather than being culturally interrogative in any way, or...
Yes. Basically, if you replace the protagonist or you replace the whole setting with like John Wick, for instance, it was still with the same revenge story. Like, literally, there is nothing different about the whole thing. This sense of them, you know, sprinkling like the Chinese aesthetic everywhere, I feel that it's really glaring. And in, you know, for example, the UI or the user interface of the game. So things like, for instance, when you want to go back to the training halls, right, which is your base. In the game, they don't call it training halls, they call it Wuguan. And they spell it out like in English, like Wuguan, which is weird. It's like, usually they have a menu that says, oh, back to Wuguan. Why would they do that? Like, it's just weird.
Like, why would they choose that one word? Why not just, if everything else is in English, just say training hall? Or?
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't make sense. And... Oh yeah, and something else also was they have the travel map, right? So there's a detective board, and then next to it is the map. Like, you can use it to travel different levels.
The detective board is like basically a board in your training hall that has like photographs of the people you're after and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, so basically you can point to them and say, "Oh, this is target number one, and I'm going to get them," and stuff like that. But right next to the detective board, there's a map, or like, I don't know what they call it, a map.
It's like a level select kind of window.
Ah, yes, a level select kind of window. And how it works is that you can point to different locations and go like, okay, I want to go to the club, I want to go to the warehouse and things like that. But again, they included a Chinese word next to it. So the level will be called the warehouse, and then they have two Chinese words next to it. And then if you want to go to the club, and then they have two Chinese words next to it. It says, I think it says Liu or Liu Xing, which means travel. And it's like, why would you, like, it doesn't make sense to put the Chinese word for travel there. Like, people usually kind of expect, like, you know, warehouse, and then there's a Chinese word for warehouse. And then if it's the club, it's a Chinese word for club. It's little things like that. And there are some words that are just wrong. I can't remember what words are wrong. Things like that. It is inconsistent, but it's also shows me that these Chinese words they're using it to sprinkle some sense of exoticism, that kind of stuff. Like,
it's more for to be visually pleasing to an English speaker who doesn't even know what that word means.
Exactly.
So it's there for like me who can look at it and go, oh, this must be authentic. This must be real. They've got a Chinese characters there.
Yeah. So to me, that was very jarring when I first saw it. And I was like, oh, weird. The interesting thing is, after that, I decided to play the game in Chinese. And it just felt a little bit more normal because the Chinese translated menu was actually more correct than the Chinese words that they have in the English menu. So,
well, that's good at least.
Yeah. So I'm actually looking forward to the Chinese voiceover because I actually do want to play the game in the Chinese voiceover and just want to see how it feels. Yeah.
That's something they don't have in it yet, or they're working on that?
For now, when I got a code, they don't have it, but it was supposed to be update that they have eventually. I think maybe in the next couple of days or so. Yeah.
The marketing team for the game also sent out a promo kit to Twitch streamers and influencers and the like, and it was like a kit of goods that included like a teapot, a seal stamp, I think there was some incense or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was okay. To be honest, the first time I saw it on Twitter, and it was shared by Janet, who's really, really nice. When I saw it, I was laughing actually. because okay, I think I was just amazed that they sent such a kit, and people were really, really enthusiastic. Like, they were really enthused about it, and they were like, oh my gosh, this is so cool, I want to get one. I was so flabbergasted by the entire thing that I was like, oh my gosh, this is for real. And everybody loved it. I mean, after a while, it really sunk in that it was actually pretty insulting, actually, because a lot of these things that they have in that kit was very religious and you know, Chinese artifacts that they have just packaged in. Sorry, give me 2 seconds. Is it disturbing your recording?
I mean, like, she's loud, but. I mean, when a cat goes off, what are you going to do?
Yeah, sorry, give me a while. I think she's just looking for pets.
Give her a pet, yeah.
Hey, baby.
I want pictures of this cat, yeah, after we're done.
I will send it to you. Yeah, she is.
She's
really cute, but she's very, very chatty. Yeah.
She's very, very vocal.
She is very, very chatty.
Do you think this is a case of developers kind of cynically just knowing that the flavor they want is this Chinese flavor, so they include all this visual, you know, motifs and stuff like this that don't feel correct to you? Or do you think it's just kind of a misguided thing that they've tried but they've kind of stumbled? Which do you think it is, or is it a mix?
To be honest, I mean, if you're talking about Slow Clap specifically, I honestly believe that they were trying to do the right thing, but maybe they didn't know how to, or maybe they just couldn't don't know how to find the right people, and they end up with something that's a little bit off. And it definitely did feel weird, but I did talk to a couple of other, like, for example, I'm pretty sure you heard of CC Tiang, who is a writer with Kotaku right now. So they used to be an indie developer. And this is something that they talked about before on their own Twitter account. When they make games and they try to pitch it to publishers, some publishers would say things like, you know, the game is not mainstream enough because it wouldn't appeal to, you know, the audience. They probably didn't say which audience, but we all know who they're referring to. and it's things like that. The default audience for games is always and is still perceived as white gamers and white players. So in a way, I would like to think that this is not done, you know, maliciously. Like, you know, I don't really think a lot of developers are doing it, or publishers, game publishers are doing it maliciously. Like, we want to make something cool so you would think that we are cool or stuff like that. I don't really think so. I think it's really the whole idea of not really understanding that if you're trying to make a game of a different culture, you really need to involve many people of that culture if you want to make that sort of game.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for. You've been listening to Hey Lesson with me, Brendan, and my guest co-host this week, Ki-hoon Chan. Thank you very much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Is there anywhere folks can find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is Crapstacular, which is C-R-A-P. And you know what? I can't even remember my own.
I can link to it, and that'll just be easier for people.
Yeah, so it's C-R-A-P-S-T-A-C-U-L-A. But yeah, it's probably better to link to it, yeah. I share a couple of my works there from time to time, so that's probably the best way to find out what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll link to the articles that we've been talking about on The Gamer as well.
Yeah.
So people can read those if they want to.
Yeah.
If you, listener, have enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting our show. You can throw a dollar or two in our tin at Patreon. Like I say, if you become a regular donor, you can get extra goodies, including access to full interviews with all the scientists, the doctors, the experts that we interview. They're often much longer than the 15 or so minutes we give them here, and a lot of interesting stuff gets edited out as well. You can hear that stuff. Just head to patreon.com/heylesson. And if you've become a subscriber, you can just simply feel good about helping us not have any ads. I'm going to give a special shout out to three particular patrons, Bok Choi, Horrendamonas, and Milk is Gross and Bad for You. Thank you to all of them. And thank you once again to Ki-hoon.
No worries. Happy to be here.
And everyone out there, thanks for listening. Goodbye.